Good morning. Next week, we are so excited to begin gathering together in our building once again. We start in-person, indoor worship services on April 25th. Please let us know if you plan to attend that morning. It's going to help us maximize our seating. And if you decide at the last minute to come on Sunday morning but haven't RSVP'd, don't let that stop you. We'll have enough room for everyone. We'll follow the state's protocols on in-person gatherings and do our part in keeping you safe and healthy. And also, we'll continue offering our services online just like we are now. In fact, you probably won't see much of a difference other than the fact that you'll start seeing people in the room. We're so excited and can't wait for next week. Last week, we started a new series called Be the Bridge. I encourage you to watch it on YouTube. If you missed it, our own Phil Manili spoke about peace. Peace and how it can transform us and our relationships. We probably need that now more than ever amidst the turbulent times we continue to live through. Peace is one of those things that feels a bit elusive. But when Jesus died on the cross, he made peace between God and us. We can have peace. It comes from Christ. And we can share his peace with others. I found myself recalling a couple of things that Phil said this week, like the fact that we can't manufacture peace. It's a gift that we receive, and it comes from God. As the Apostle Paul says, we can put peace on, kind of like a new sweater. And what a great image that is, except if we don't first get rid of stuff like our anger, rage, malice, slander, dishonesty, there's a long list that Paul went through. It's kind of like pulling a new sweater on over some really dirty, stinky old clothes. And it's just a matter of time before all of that shows through. Peace is a significant building block in our relationships with others, especially those that have been tested, strained, and maybe even damaged this past year. You know, that's why we're doing this series, because I think we need it. You need it. I need it. Have you burned a bridge or two recently? Well, maybe this will help the rebuilding process or help you avoid damaging an important relationship in your life right now. Whatever it may be, it starts with you. Learn to be the bridge. Our memory verse for this month comes from Romans chapter 14, verse 19. Making every effort to do it leads to peace. That's our goal. We're going to see our Old Testament patriarch Isaac do exactly this in our passage today, where he encounters conflict with the Philistines. Because sometimes the best way to be the bridge when there's conflict or tension in a relationship is by learning when to take a walk. For the sake of our relationships, it's so important to keep a cool head and avoid hostility. I know, that's easier said than done. As I begin, I want to point out one assumption that I'm making throughout this whole series. And it's an assumption that underpins the whole Bible. It's this: relationships matter. People matter. In fact, people and relationships matter so much to God that he was willing to experience the ultimate humiliation and death for the sake of you and me, so that we might know God, have a relationship with him, and be able to experience life with him in it. One of the worst things that our sin does is damage and destroy the relationships that we have with one another. It's the ones with our spouse, our kids, parents, siblings, friends, coworkers, boss. I mean, no one is left untouched. Broken relationships make us isolated. They rob us of the good life. On the other hand, strong relationships are like a fountain of joy. So what do you do when conflict or relational tension threatens to destroy the bridge that we share with one another? Well, that's where we're headed today with the Old Testament patriarch Isaac. Pastor Angela introduced us to this passage from Genesis 26, and I can't say this adventure or misadventure of Isaac and his wells is a staple of Bible studies everywhere. In fact, you probably have never heard of it, or you don't remember. The reason it's part of the biblical story is actually to affirm God's promise to Abraham, and that still applies to his descendants like Isaac. But this passage also shows us how Isaac himself has faith in God. There's a famine. God appears to Isaac and says, stay in the promised land. Don't go to Egypt. There's a famine, likely because of drought. And rather than travel all the way down to Egypt in the lush, well-watered valleys of the Nile, God invites Isaac to stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you and bless you. I imagine this could have been a difficult decision for Isaac. I mean, he leads a semi-nomadic lifestyle. He's used to kind of going where he wants to as he follows herds of livestock, wherever there's good pasture. That's the kind of life that Isaac led. And at this point, we can assume that Isaac has probably a pretty big household. And that's a little misleading. You know, we don't know how many people are in his household or how many people are a part of his kind of entourage. But we do know that a king thought it prudent to speak with him personally. I mean, this is kind of a clue. I mean, the king's got a lot of messengers to do his bidding. Unless he sees Isaac as an equal. He's probably like a tribal chieftain. And all that to say, Isaac isn't just by himself, or it's not just him and his immediate family. He's leading a big group of people, and they're all counting on him to make the right decision. You know, what I love about the biblical record is how matter-of-fact it is, really in the midst of great drama. You can see there's this huge decision. Do I stay here and possibly starve, or do I go down there where we have a chance to survive? But there's no mention at all of Isaac wrestling with this. Instead, Genesis forthrightly says, so Isaac stayed. That's it. So Isaac stayed. I mean, come on, give me more than that. I don't know, maybe it was that simple for Isaac, but I doubt it. I mean, there is only so much room to write the book of Genesis, so they gotta cut some things out. But in the process of reading stories like Isaac, and when we think of Abraham and Jacob and all of the the great biblical characters of faith, we kind of see them as heroes, and rightly so. But we also have the impression that they came out of the womb as like saints, when clearly they were not. Genesis makes no attempt whatsoever to gloss over their weaknesses or mistakes. In fact, usually it just kind of says it in the same matter-of-fact tone. And this should give you and I some encouragement. I mean, the fact that these heroes of faith didn't just come out of the womb like saints. You know, heroes of faith aren't born. They're made. Or maybe a better way of saying it is that they're grown. And our own journey with God matters. It matters as much of the destination. However, sometimes you just need to get there. And however Isaac did it, Isaac arrived at a decision of faith. So can I. So can you. Doubts, fears, mistakes, they're all part of arriving where God calls us. And that's to a place of trust. So here in the midst of Isaac's story of trusting God, really, is a growing conflict between the people of Isaac and the people of Abimelech, king of the Philistines. Let's see how many times I can pronounce that name the same way in the course of this sermon. Abimelech. It was common in this time period for a semi-nomadic people like Isaac and agrarian societies to exist really side by side. Isaac's people were the nomads, primarily herding sheep, goats, etc. They moved around periodically. They didn't just stay in one place, but they also probably weren't on the move constantly. They would, you know, stay for a while and then go to the next spot. And here alongside them, Abimelech's people were primarily farmers. They stayed put. They built towns and cities. And both societies employed similar techniques of farming, really, of raising livestock or crops. They just leaned one way or the other a little more heavily. So Isaac and his people moved into the area, and they planned to stay a while. And really, as an insurance policy, Isaac decides to lie about his wife, Rebekah. In 26, verse 7, we read that when the men of that place asked about his wife, He said, "She's my sister," because he was afraid to say, "She's my wife." He thought the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebecca, because she is beautiful. Well, Isaac's thinking kind of goes like this. You know, I'm a foreign man with a beautiful wife. I'm wearing a target on my back. Or the same man with a beautiful sister probably gets treated like a king. You know, everyone treats the family of the hot girl really well. Well, true. There's not a lot of chivalry here on the part of Isaac. He's definitely more concerned about his own skin, but a dead Isaac is no good to anyone. So however you see it, however you justify it or not, they apparently keep this ruse up for a long time. I mean, Isaac and Rebecca pretending that they're brother and sister. However, all of this story about the lie, or this part about the lie, it happens immediately following this moment of faith where God invites Isaac to stay a while and promises to be with him and bless him. And so Isaac stayed. There's this beautiful moment of trust. And immediately, Isaac forgets that God is with him. I mean, this is almost inexplicable. I mean, how can a person have such faith in God's provision and even his protection, and then, like, the next day, do something that totally shows he doesn't trust God? I mean, if God's got him there, he's going to take care of him. I'll tell you how people can do that. It's because we're human. You know, we all make dumb decisions, especially when self-preservation feels a little threatened. We'll lie. We'll show a lack of integrity. And this definitely isn't good, definitely isn't pleasing to God. And it often has a ripple effect in our own relationships. When Abimelech finds out that Isaac had lied, he's really upset. And even though it all gets worked out in the course of this passage, it had to have sown some seeds of doubt between Isaac and Abimelech. And here's one of the first steps that we can take in being the bridge in our relationships with others. It's this. Relationships are built on trust. Once that trust is threatened, or once that trust has been eroded, it's really hard to sustain any sort of relationship. The bridge analogy is one that serves us well in this instance. You know, there's got to be bedrock. There's got to be solid footings to support the structure above. Otherwise, you limit what you can build, or you undermine the whole thing. You want to cause a catastrophic collapse of any relationship? Well, make it so the other person doesn't trust you. Trust. It's the bedrock that our relationships are built on. And if you've undermined or eroded the trust in one of your relationships, there is really no guarantee that trust can be repaired. Relational trust is priceless. Treat it that way. Don't let it slip through your hands. And if your actions or maybe inaction has caused someone to lose faith or lose trust in you, well, first step is you got to own it. Don't make excuses. You'll probably need to be humble and ask for forgiveness. And remember, it's going to take time for that trust to be built once again. That is, if it can be built once again. Trust isn't something that we can microwave. Instead, it takes a proven track record over time. So what happens next in our Genesis story between Isaac and Abimelech is probably a direct result of this eroded trust. Verse 12. Isaac planted crops in that land and the same year reaped 100-fold because the Lord blessed him. The man became rich, and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. And then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Move away from us. You've become too powerful for us."
Here we have Isaac's miracle harvest of crops, it's the sign of God's favor and blessing. Remember, there's a drought. It's not just a bumper crop that Isaac harvests. It's a bumper crop during a drought. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. While Isaac feared they would be jealous of his wife, the Philistines end up being more jealous of his success. So they start sabotaging his wells. In an arid landscape like this one, sources of water are precious. You need a spring, or you build a cistern to catch runoff water after the rains, or you dig a well. This is no small task. Here's an illustration of one of these wells. It dates back to biblical times. This particular one is 135 feet deep. I mean, imagine how long it took to dig. And these guys don't have shovels. Having access to water is so important. You'll do anything to get it. It makes the whole area surrounding it productive and inhabitable. So filling one of these up with rubble and dirt, I mean, that's no small act of vandalism. It's like declaring war. The Philistines move from being jealous to feeling threatened. Move away from us. You've become too powerful. Jealousy lies at the root of so much human conflict. If our relational bridges are built on trust, then jealousy, well, it would be like the earthquake that has the potential to damage everything. We want to avoid it. We want to avoid being jealous. And if we become aware of it, we'll need to do the hard work required to grow past it. We also want to avoid that most human quality of trying to make other people jealous of us. I know, there isn't a single person listening that's ever tried to make other people jealous. Just like I know there's not a single person listening who ever uses Facebook or Instagram to show the world how perfect their life truly is. But jealousy is ugly. It destroys friendships. And when jealousy morphs into something worse, like feeling threatened or just straight up open hostility, well, that's when your friend becomes an enemy, or as we like to say, a frenemy. You know, these are the people with whom you are friendly or who were friends, but now there's this animosity that just exists right under the surface. Usually, that animosity is fueled by jealousy or insecurity or both. I don't know what else to say other than if you find yourself jealous of someone, take time to reflect on your motives and your priorities. I mean, pray about it. Allow the peace of Christ to rule in your heart. Do whatever it takes to move past it. I know it kind of sounds simplistic, but I think it's more like that verse at the beginning of this whole passage that says, "So Isaac stayed." I mean, get there. Move past your jealousy, however you do it. Just get there. And if you can't get there, or if you recognize that an important relationship in your life is under a ton of strain, well, then try to do whatever it takes to keep that relationship first, or keep the possibility of relationship open in the future. And this is exactly what Isaac does. He keeps the possibility for relationship open by taking a walk. He intentionally de-escalates the confrontation. It's like in military terms, you don't call it a retreat, it's a tactical withdrawal. The Philistines argued with Isaac 3 different times over water rights, and instead of open hostility and fighting for his rights, I mean, he did dig these wells, did he not? Isaac chose to deliberately not escalate the problem. Do you realize how much strength, how much self-control that takes? You know, I don't know in modern times that we have many good examples of this. But we know that in Isaac's case, God is with him. I mean, he finds water again and again and again. And it's not just Isaac in this whole scenario that's to be commended for his behavior. I think Abimelech is too, yes. You know, filling wells in with dirt is the definition of like passive aggressive. But before open war began, Abimelech is very direct move away. You've become too powerful for us. Very direct and also very humble for him to acknowledge that, like, you're too strong. And this humility, this direct communication, keeps the possibility of future reconciliation open. That's so important. And the relationship between Isaac and Abimelech, you know, it may have deteriorated, but no one has burned the bridge. Unfortunately, in our day-to-day lives, conflict is an unavoidable component of just being human. And when we manage it biblically, when we learn to do that in a way that seeks to honor God by putting relationships rather than our own self-interest first, conflict can be a catalyst for change. It can be an opportunity for spiritual and relational growth. And the critical issue, the line you and I should never cross, don't burn the bridge. I know, simple, but don't burn the bridge. And there's lots of strategies that you could employ here. You know, you could do like Isaac and learn to walk away when you're angry. You take a minute or an hour or a day to calm down. Jesus tells us to turn the other cheek. And we all know that's extremely hard. And turning the cheek isn't the same, however, as just rolling over and letting the other person have their way. You know, walking away or turning the cheek isn't God's way of telling us that we're supposed to allow others to abuse us. No. It's saying that for the sake of our relationships with friends, family, or whoever, make a decision not to escalate. Don't burn the bridge. You know, because there's two people involved, we can only be in control of our own actions. The fact is, the other person might choose to burn that bridge, and you have no control over it. But when Jesus says, "Blessed are the peacemakers," when Paul says, "Let's make every effort to do what leads to peace and mutual edification," it means that we go the extra mile to put people and our relationships with them first. Whenever I prepare a sermon like this one, I'm acutely aware that there are some of you who are stuck in unhealthy, maybe even abusive relationships. And I want to be clear that in walking away from this fight, Isaac was using that as a kind of boundary. And clearly, God was honoring that decision with a new discovery of water over and over and over again. But this very intentional walking away and moving around provided a buffer for Isaac. And if you're in a relationship with someone and they're constantly the aggressor, that's what you need. You need a buffer or a boundary. You know, God's will for you isn't that you just continue to take it. And if someone tells you otherwise, they're distorting scripture. No, Christ climbed up on a cross and died for me and you because he thinks you're worth it. You matter to him. And you deserve to be treated with the same level of respect and esteem and dignity that God has for you. So my prayer is that all of us would learn to be the bridge, that we would value our relationships, that we would seek peace and resolution when there's conflict, that we would have great wisdom in our dealings with others, that we would learn to take a walk when we need to calm down, that we would root out the sources of jealousy in our lives. I mean, imagine how cool, how attractive a group of people would be who are honoring God and honoring others in these ways. Yeah, that's the church. That's who you and I are. We're God's family right now. So let's learn to be the bridge. Please join me in prayer. Lord, we come before you on this this beautiful day, and we are so grateful for the gift of life, for the relationship that you've established with us. And you know, relationships are can be such a source of joy, but they can also be so challenging, especially when there's conflict. And this isn't something that we can avoid, Lord. So help us to learn how to manage our conflict in a biblical way, in a way that honors you and honors others, Lord. Make the changes in our heart that we need to make, whether that's rooting out sources of jealousy or learning how to calm down and not get so angry or whatever it might be. But also give us the courage, Lord, to confront issues that need to be brought up directly, to communicate on those rather than just passively avoiding them all the time. It's such a delicate balance sometimes, Lord, but you give us the wisdom. Help us to know what to do and when. And for those of us, Lord, who are stuck, who are maybe in a relationship that is kind of abusive or unhealthy, I pray that you would grant us great courage, great wisdom in establishing a buffer or a boundary, Lord, that you would bring wise counsel and support into our lives, Lord, because relationships can be such a source of blessing for us. And I pray that that's the way they would be. Help us to be your people. And we pray this in your name. Amen. Well, may God bless you and be with you this upcoming week. We'll see you soon.